Accession number 26864, Reel 6.
Arthur Caney, Reel 6. So what were your thoughts on being told that you were going to India?
Well, interesting, because we knew that, anyway, that was interesting, but going to India meant that we would go up to the border with the Japanese. That was the idea. But on the way to India, about six people died through malaria. It was a very special type of malaria caught in Madagascar. So we then disembarked at Bombay, moved inland to a place called Amanaga, and the others, the division, moved in other places where we were kept in isolation, in a way, to try to not bring the malaria into India.
Were you taking precautions for malaria?
Oh, yes. Mepocrine.
Right.
And paludrine later, but mepocrine. Yes, in India, we all went through the course of those.
Right. Had you been given any when you were in Madagascar?
Yes, we all had our mepocrine.
Right.
Yes, each person.
Yeah. What was it like at Amanaga?
Amanaga? Well, it was a station. We were in a hutted area. Excuse me, it was a peacetime station. I think other units were stationed in the camp. But we were well looked after again. There were plenty of Indians to help. They'd always been helped. But each unit was given a government representative to do the pay. Well, I'd just come off a pay course. So when I started talking to these clerks, they were very well trained. But they were, like all civil servants, died in the wall and couldn't see quite that changes would come about. But I just left from I was up to date, where they were, well, at least took three months to get their letters sometimes, so they must have been 3 months out of date. But they were very well skilled. They had a book, but they tried to stick to the book. So I had a bit of friction with them to start with. But then I realised it didn't make any difference. If we argued about, as long as we had our money, and they were very fair, and we had our money, and everybody had the correct amount of money, and I think the Indian government must have put some money in the kitty. Each was given a rug to go by the side of the bed. We had our mosquito nets, and we tried to. There were no mosquitoes about. I think there were sandfly or something around, so we had to wear them. But we had a pleasant time in Amanaga, training again, of course. But we couldn't. The first 6 weeks it was a bit quiet because they were trying to cure us of this malaria if we had it. Because nobody knew how many people had contacted the disease.
Was it some of your regiment that had died?
No. On the boat there were six.
Right.
Who they were, I don't know,
right.
Except that we knew each time when somebody had to go overboard.
Yeah. So what was it like at Amanaga? I mean, you had to get used to the climate. Way of life,
well, it was almost like peace. Well, everybody didn't know there was a war on there. There was all peacetime. Everything was going peacetime. We'd go down the bazaars and get a haircut outside and buy the old. Everybody had a walking stick. But everybody had somebody come in and help in each billet. Mm. Somebody come and clean and all that. Paid for it by the government. Mm. So really, it was an easy life at that stage. Except for when we went on hard training.
Yeah. And what sort of training were you doing? Obviously getting used to the climate and fitness and so on, but was there any particular...
Not special, no. Yeah. There was not... No, we're not going to do any landing. Not that, this is... Mm. No, we knew we were ready to go up north for jungle training, I suppose. Mm. But we're supposed to go to a place called Ranchi, which is up very north of the country.
Yes.
And... We sent the advance party. They went by road. And then that was cancelled. Because somebody, when we were fit enough, they realised that the Germans were just trying to come through Persia in Iraq. And the Russians then had come over on our side then, because Hitler had gone into Russia. because the Germans and Russia were on the same side in the beginning of the war. So people don't realise that they were not on our side until Germany went advanced into Russia. And yeah, we then moved from... I've got to think about this now. It's going back a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a year or two.
We got to the stage when we were ordered to Persia and Iraq. So we moved there to Baghdad. We started off in a camp called Shaiba, just desert. And we had water. Our engineers had found water, and they had taps all over the place, because we had been losing people, or people getting pretty ill with dehydration. But then we learned that we had to take salt. And a salt tablet was issued with a mepetrine. So we had a malaria tablet and a salt tablet. And very hot place, Shaiba, very, very hot. Lots. Well, I know how hot it must have been because we're drinking a lot of water. And we didn't need to go to get to the urinals for 3 days. I know that. And we were drinking pints and pints and pints of water. As much, well, we didn't measure it, but I know as much as you could have. And it was there's a standpipe, ice cold water from the desert. Wonderful when you think of it, how they found this. And, 3 days, it was, all that had come out in sweat.
Yes.
So we couldn't do much training.
And you were actually near Baghdad, was this?
A place called Shaiba near Baghdad, and then we moved off, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And was that a camp or...?
A tented camp. Yes, it was a tented camp.
And it had been used before, had it?
I'm not sure.
Right.
I don't think, you see, we seem to be able to move around. People would put our camp up for us from the division or somewhere. So it was all well done, well organized. Baghdad, yeah, we used to walk up the street. Everybody very smart. We had our uniform then, khaki, but our webbing belt and our ankles, all white, blanket white. That's for walking out. So we all had a set of kit, a good suit, with all our stuff polished and blanket up, rolled up in a kit bag. So when we moved, and if we came out, we had to walk out, we could pull it out quickly, put it on, and pretty smart. They were all kept smart in those days.
What was the atmosphere like in Baghdad and Shaiba? I mean, were the locals pleased to see you there?
They were really, because it was money, wasn't it? We were paying out this. Shoe. Oh, I can't tell you, you can't put it on there. But there were some shoe shine boys that around. We could get our boots shoe shined. And of course, they used to call out to you, "Bags of bullshit, Johnny, bags of bullshit." And they'd be there polishing your boots. Oh, they learnt all the stories.
So how long were you at Shaiba?
Oh, not very long. I think it must have been 4 or 5 days, not very much. Then we had to move up through to Syria, Damascus. We had a few days there. Maybe a few weeks. And then we moved on to Persia. Place called Qum, Qum, Qum. At night it was very, very cold, and we were issued with pashtuns, large, long coats made from sheepskin, and boots, sheepskin boots, and high up, and socks which were impregnated with oil or grease, because it was so cold. Going to be, but unfortunately these were issued so quickly that the sheepskin coats had not been cured properly, so it's full of maggots out of them. So So we get rid of that. Anyway, dug in, we had to dig in our tents, small tents. We dug them in. And went to the local bazaars and found primus. Each tent bought a primus stove. Then we had flimsy tins for the petrol. And making holes on those, we put them on top of the primus stove. So we had a heater in the camp, in the tent. And if it was in the wilds a bit, or the outskirts of the town, which we could go into by vehicle, but the cooks had a wonderful system then of cooking on oil and water. It was a trench of which they had the containers with the flue underneath, and at the end were two tins, drums, with taps attached, made by our local fitters. Small tap each. One was water and one was waste oil from the vehicles. So they would heat a splash plate at the bottom, and when that was wet, quite hot, you would drip, adjust the taps, so one drip of water and one drip of oil. And when they splashed onto this, they produced a flame. So that flame then went under the containers, so our cooking was done, all the cooking was done by oil drip then. We had in reserve our ordinary machines, our ordinary hydro burners for petrol, but this was economical and practical. But then it got colder, much colder, and the lavatories were dug. They dug trenches 15 feet deep. So our own, my company had a support company then, included the Pioneer Platoon. Now the Pioneer Platoon dug these holes. I was a sergeant major of the what am I on now? Yes, I wasn't then. It's a colour sergeant, that's right. And would go around and inspect these, and they would. I wanted to know whether they were 15 feet. They said you must have them 15 feet. Because when you throw the chlorine on top of it, it would disappear. Anything less than 15 would build up. But unfortunately, we didn't have seats or anything like that. There's a pole. There's a pole along the top. Now, in the winter, going out to sit on a pole is very, very grim. But to make sure you didn't fall in, we had a rope and a peg. And the rope had knots on it. Depends on how big the man was, I suppose. Anyhow, they were pegged in all the way along. So you would hold this rope and sit on this pole. And the wind would blow. The snow would blow. And occasionally, of course, the peg would get loose. And the chap would fall over. He was lucky if he didn't fall right in. But it was great fun, really, for somebody else if they did fall.
Yeah. How tough were living conditions? I mean, with the
it's very cold. Oh, yeah. Then, this particular time I'm talking about, at night it was very, very cold. And but we made this, the primus stove within a small tent, and six people, or maybe four, the heat was there, plus these postines. Keep warm at night with the postines and the blankets and so on, but wandering around to have a wash and whatever you else had to do was a bit not very comfortable.
Did you see any action there or any unfriendly natives or anything in Persia?
No, everybody was friendly there because they wanted the money. I mean, it was straightforward. You couldn't blame them. They'd come along selling eggs and things like that, and it was an interesting time. But we did a lot of route marches. Now, what is so good, thinking back, we marched a lot to keep fit, of course. But we marched so many miles, and the division was knitted together, and our brigade especially, and each mess, sergeant's mess, an officer's mess, each month we would invite six from Cameronians, six from the Inskillians, and the artillery to the mess for due. And the next month we would go to theirs. So after a few months, well, I realised now that we knew each other's names, and this is where this feeling of spirit corps and like we had in the regiment before the war was there within the division. And to make it better, we would go on a march, and our band would normally meet us 3 miles from the end of the march. But we were given in turn a piper from the Cameronians would come with us for a march, and you know, that was so wonderful. Wonderful for marching with. And we used to think, well, there's a piper, and he used to think the same. So he went back and would no doubt tell his friends, his mates, how we looked after it. And then we have it in Skilling. So there we have these pipers with us when we're marching. Now, before the war, we wouldn't have, that we've been too proud to do that. We wouldn't do that. But now, the feeling was such that we looked forward to it, because we could march with a piper. And I look back at those times, I think that was wonderful, because we could march much further. Well, it was easier then. No, I think that was a wonderful idea by the brigade commander or the division commander to do this. So you can see the feeling, looking back, the feeling built up within a division.
Yes.
In peacetime, this peacetime, really, ready for war.
So how long were you at Coombe altogether?
Well, we moved from Coombe to Kermanshah. Kermanshah. Now that was the Kermanshah. I used to go into the town there, and these Persian rugs were hanging by their hundreds in the roof. But we were told that they would put the Persian rugs out in the roadway and run the vehicles over them to wear them down, to wear them in. I once, when we were on manoeuvres, I used to wander off a lot with my friend on my own, and I came across a small camp of three tents, wonderfully shaped tents, well done, made quality stuff, where they were weaving these rugs, and it was interesting to see it. Then we came across the Persian army. You've never seen anything like it in all your life. The officers were dressed in comic opera stuff, and they were painted, they had makeup, and the troops had no shoe boots, no shoes at all, putties and bare feet. So you can imagine a ragtag and bobble. But what the contrast between these comic opera Persian officers, I cannot believe when I see. I couldn't believe it.
What was their attitude to you?
Well, we ignored each other. I don't think we ever spoke. No, we just ignored. Because they were, I don't know what they were doing there, really, because they would have gone over to the Germans, because that's why we're there, to stop. Our main aim was to protect the railway line through to Russia. The convoys were passing through all the time, and we were there to protect them. So we're there strategically, there to be moved if required at any time. It was except the code, it was an interesting time. Anything like that was interesting. I mean, we travelled quite a bit. We'd done Madagascar, India, and spent a bit of time in India, plus this. It was very good. Because we're all relatively young, and it was all interesting.
Yes, yeah. How long were you in Persia altogether, do you think?
Not too long, about 9 months, 12 months. I'm not sure. It's very difficult to remember, but it was about 8 to 9 months. And we had to leave in 3 days. I had to think we had 3 days in Tehran. And I remember driving down the main street in a gurry, 2 hours, you know, shouting, singing all the way down past the Royal Persian Palace. And we needed a bit of a change. But we didn't get involved with the local people much there. The drink wasn't quite what we wanted. Each unit had its own supply of beer and things, cigarettes and so on. Pretty well supplies.
You handed that out, did you? As it were?
Well, we had our own little canteens. Mm-hmm. Each unit formed their own little canteen. And the PRI officer would go to the NAFI, draw all this stuff up. And the paddies came in very handy at these things later on. Then, not so much then, they were doing their paddies duties, but they became part of the supply within the unit of elementary things like toothbrush, toothpaste and so on.
Right. Yeah.
We had some good paddies around.
Did you? Yeah. Well, how important was the padre?
Well, he's there if he's wanted. At that stage, we didn't think much of him. But once we were in the battles later on of Italy and so on, he was more in... wanted more.
Did you ever, in any time during your service career, find alcohol a problem? You know, causing problems or people with alcohol problems?
Well, yes. 1940, yes. Well, I remember one case. In the Dunkirk area... We call it Dunkirk now, but then it was the fighting towards the coast. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we had an evening together where we would gather together and we'd have whatever was going, wine and so on, and we'd drink pretty well. But one PSM, platoon sergeant major of the Pioneer Platoon, I never forget, drank so much, as we all must have done then, and I remember him shouting, "I want blood," you know. He was killed the next day. He had blood. Mm. Oh, yeah, it's funny how things go, isn't it?
Mm.
There's this chap shouting, which daft in a way, and there we are, he's dead next day.
Mm.
With the shell blown up. Drink, well, now, well, in the unit as such as we were, it was controlled, but plenty of drink went on. And the odd man had too much and he was punished if he did things he shouldn't do. But normally we covered it all up.
Mm. You covered it up?
Oh, yes. Because we were all mates together. We'd just done a little bit of fighting, Dunkirk. We knew we were doing a lot more.
Mm.
Oh, we had some good leaves. We were in Tehran, yes. Let's see. We had leaves in Beirut.
Did you?
7 days in Beirut, in those days.
That was quite a glamorous place, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, and everything. Wonderful place. Mm. Lovely beaches. Mm. Oh, yes, a glamorous place. Huh?
Yeah. So, a time in Persia then, and then where to then?
Persia, Iraq. We're now making our way back to the UK, aren't we? Oh, no, Europe. Persia. I'm visualising now the map. We went over the Kaitak Pass right over back into Syria. That's what it gets us. That's where, that's Beirut, Syria. Mm. And it had a mountain warfare school, of which we sent many of the RAF comes. I didn't go because I was with the headquarter company at that time. And I could have gone. Looking back, I should have done. I was learning skiing and all that. And I thought, well, twerp. I was too busy at the time. But they came back fit. They'd learnt survival. Not as I see survival is taught here now. These were elementary things. Yeah, I suppose over those days they hadn't got down to this. Look, everybody seems to know survival, don't they?
So you made your way back to the UK?
Oh, no, sorry, no, we didn't get back to the... I slipped up, that was wrong. So we're in Persia. Mm-hmm. Now, in Scotland, there then we had to make our way, we were preparing for the land on Sicily. So we went back through the Suez Canal. Mm-hmm. We camped on the tents, which were already there, must have been permanent tentage people, transit camp, for a few days. Monty came to give us a lecture. Now, Monty was good. Even that's the early days of Monty. But he had the right approach. He'd got the troops doing everything he wanted, and then we looked up to him in such a way that we knew he was the commander.
Mm-hmm. Had you heard much about him before? You heard him speak?
No.
Right, so you seemed a newcomer.
You see, we'd been long enough to weigh people up. And we could see who was a bluffer and who was not a bluffer. Or we thought we could. But most of our people then, it was pre-war, there were some bluffers, but after that, there were all the people we had. We were very fortunate. We had some wonderful people.
What did he say to you?
Well, he walked, not personally. Well, he did have he told us we're going to land in Sicily. He gave us the idea. No, he didn't say that. He was preparing for a landing, yes. We didn't know where.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was still... We swam in the canal.
Did you?
Stinking place.
Yeah. What did you feel about doing a landing? Had you done training on landings?
Well, we did a bit of training there. Where did we do the training on the landings? I'm just thinking. Well, we've done quite a bit of... We were soldiers. Mm. And, no, we couldn't do much training there. We got to Egypt. Mm-hmm. On the side. Then we were ready to go up to land port side. Mm-hmm. To board a boat called the Bergensford, which was must have been a Norwegian boat. So we landed with all our kit in, ready to get off into land in assault boats. Right. So we prepared. So we had a few days on board. Mm. And then we were ready, we were told then what we were going to do, land on Sicily.
Right. Yeah. What were your feelings about that?
Well, I don't know, nothing different. There was a war on. No,
I suppose you were not surprised at much, really. Or?
No, we've been everywhere. I mean, we were there to go where we were, and it seemed to be all interesting.
And how much detail did they go into about the landings, where you'd be landing?
Yes. Well, we knew we were supposed to go in reserve. And we knew where we were going to land, Calabria. But part of the way through, we were called in, not in reserve, but we got on this boat, Borgesford, and then we knew when we were going to get off, the day we were going to get off. Dates now I've forgotten, but we had to go down the ropes to get on the landing craft. And before that, we'd gone around got my men to go to the kitchen and scrounged loaves of bread, French bread, which we each sorted out and packed away in our kit, knowing that that would help. But when we were ready and assembled, all ready to get down, to go down the ropes to get on the assault craft, I was astounded to see a man holding a plate out for his tip. Oh dear, some of the chaps were putting money in. So I stopped that. How can you imagine? There's these Norway... I mean, they were good lads, other boats, but on this boat, we're about to go off, down the blooming rope. You could have lost your life going off the Mr. Rung, if you could. And they were handing a tip as though he'd been on a cruise. Oh, that didn't last very long. They soon went...
And you went down these ropes. Was this in the dark or was this in daylight?
No, early morning.
Right, okay. What could you see as you got that moment? Could you see the coast? Or
No. We got in the boat. Early morning, yeah, got in the boat. And then we made our way by a salt craft towards the coast. Now, it was a bit tricky then, you see, because the Germans were then firing the machine, the aircraft, were firing at the boats as we went across. Now, you could see, they must have been bad shots. We could see the machine gun bullets going through the sea in front or behind. And the area which I could see, and all the boats that I could see, about 10 or 12 in my area, didn't get hit. And I thought there were quite a few planes flying down at that time. All they must have had.
Arthur Caney, end of reel 6.